I think it works great.
Thank you. So I've pulled up our kind of topics to discuss today.
Yeah.
Maybe we could start with what you do, Mandy. You're in Calgary, of course, same as myself. And how you got started in what you do. And I know we've talked about it before, but we could refresh people quickly.
I'm a registered psychologist. I'm in Calgary. I do general psychology, but the areas that I kind of have greater interest in, I guess you could say, are trauma and grief. I do couples work. I work a lot with anxiety, depression, and I do a lot of identity development, which has been really fascinating, especially coming out of the pandemic, helping people reconnect with who they are and figure out what that looks like in a world that feels a little unsteady these days.
It's interesting when you talk about identity itself, though. You know, did we find who we truly are during the pandemic, or do we change?
That's a really great question. And I think that it is one that is difficult to answer. You know, what do you focus on and how do you decide who you are? How do you decide what facets of your person that you reconnected with or that you've distanced yourself from, right? And I think identity development is a lifelong journey, and it changes. And we, you know, as a society, as a world, we have experienced and are still experiencing things that none of us are really prepared for because they've never happened before, at least in our lifetimes. And they've never happened with, you know, the information freeway that we live in. We have instant access to information. We get overloaded with information. How do we know what to focus on in that and what not to? So there's so many different factors, Zach, that play into this. But really learning to slow things down and connect with what's important to you, with what your values are, doing a bit of exploration in that area can really help anchor you, especially in times that are so unpredictable. So.
Interesting. You know, whether it's friendship or relationships, they say is if you can communicate well, you can connect well with that individual. Now, we put those two categories usually together. Is it a separate process to work on and then they should come together, communication and connection?
So, as a therapist, I think communication is really important. And I'm always curious of how people do that. I think that they are separate yet connected. And I say that meaning that in order to effectively communicate, you need to feel a connection. How you define connection, is a curious thing. The old school of therapy, you know, you go see a psychologist or you go see a couples counselor, and they want the couple to start talking to each other better, to communicate more effectively, to be heard, to be seen, to be understood, which is still goals that we have. But if we're not connected, meaning that if we don't feel safe, if we don't feel that we're in a trusting space with our partner or our friend, or even within ourselves, it's really difficult to hear what the other person's saying. When we're not connected, we're kind of dysregulated emotionally, physiologically. We can be in this state of being more anxious or being more worried or not really being present. So it makes communication really difficult.
For you, Mandy, how do you define connection in a relationship?
So I think connection is multi-layered, but at the foundation, you know, when I'm working with, in practice, even in my own personal life, to me, connection is when you can feel that you're in a safe space and that that trust is there. And for me, that happens very on a very deep level, like a almost like my nervous system can take an exhale, almost, if that makes sense to you. So before we can really start to communicate, finding those quiet moments of connection, finding you know, just sharing space with someone, being comfortable in the silence, that to me is being connected.
You know, you talk about trust, and you brought that up this morning a few times. What is that? Exactly. Is that meaning this couple, or this couple, one partner is not cheating on the other? Is that what you mean by trust? And what is safety exactly when it comes to trust and safety and all these things?
So, not talking about the particulars of infidelity or, you lied to me, those kind of things. I'm talking more on a systems knowing of safety and trust. So, when you like with someone and you feel pretty good being in their presence, they don't kind of give you that spidey sense, like your shoulders don't all of a sudden start coming up. Right. Not like we're conscious of that, or our body language, we don't feel like protecting ourselves so much.
Interesting. That makes sense. It's like tippy-toeing around the relationship or certain triggers of that other individual you got to be careful with.
Yeah, there's a comfort. There's a knowing within you that you are in a mentally, emotionally, and physically safe place within yourself and with the other person. Sure. And that over time, we develop trust, right? With consistent behavior, with consistent words and actions coming together. And when we're in that space of trust and safety, then we can start communicating and learning the skills of how to share what we need, deepening that connection through communication.
For sure.
But if we don't feel like we can trust or that we're connected, it's tough to do that.
How do you define connection versus chemistry? Or are they very similar?
Well, it's interesting you bring up chemistry, because when we talk about love, falling in love has phases, and one of them is very chemical. In the first few months of liking somebody, that first phase is very much influenced by our chemistry, and it's a potpourri of hormones and chemistry that support connection, right, and heighten that sensory experience that bring us together and start bonding us. And then as the relationship begins to evolve more, we start to deepen genuine connection and friendship and trust and develop all of those pieces. And then comes the longer commitment. And so it ebbs and flows. And a lot of people can get confused over, falling in love or having anxiety, actually. So it's kind of interesting.
We hear the honeymoon phase of a relationship, right? Where everything is well, and then all of a sudden that person's true colors come out. Is that just common in relationships, where that first few months or year is so heavenly and perfect because we as human beings naturally put this guard up? Is that what's going on in that situation?
Well, I think, managing our expectations getting into relationships is important too. And there's a lot of, I love Hollywood, I love watching movies, but it kind of does a disservice sometimes to reality, because we expect things to look and be a certain way. And I hate to say this, Zach, well, I don't hate to say it, I think it's actually really awesome because it creates a lot more opportunity for connection. But the profound is in the mundane. The profound in a relationship eventually becomes your partner takes out the garbage and that's really hot. I know that sounds maybe strange, but, the chemistry is there to help us bond and connect. And then over time, that gives us those opportunities to deepen that and get to know one another. And so the honeymoon phase, if we call it that, it does exist. But at the same time, we can keep regenerating it. Relationships have seasons. We ebb and flow. Just like, markets go up and down, relationships go up and down. Just like our seasons change in a relationship, you can go through a winter. But it's connection and communication that really help to protect us and to keep us with our partners.
We look at social media, not just Hollywood, but social media itself can really take a toll on someone's mind and what the perception of a relationship should look like versus reality. Mm-hmm. So say I'm with somebody and we are watching, or that significant other sees this couple on a beach living their best life, and here we are on a couch for months or years on end. That takes a toll, right? Oh, well, look how happy they look. And what am I doing? Netflixing every night.
Right. And you bring up a really important point. what we see on social media, again, is what the people want us to see. It's not a picture of the reality. And so when we get really narrowly focused and in relationships, something that is one of my favorite areas to work with couples in is expanding focus out. Because when you focus on the problems, what you focus on, you amplify, right? And so when we talk about connection, part of that is in those quiet moments, all of a sudden there's tenderness, there's intimacy, there's the opportunity for wonderful, loving moments to happen between people, or liking moments to happen between people. But if we're always looking for the train station down the way to make our relationship better, or these big gestures of big trips or gifting, or, you know, once we, you know, have X amount of dollars in the bank account, or once we're having, you know, intimate relations this many times a week, then we've reached the pinnacle of this great relationship, or having an expectation that there's a certain level of passion and romance all the time. It's like you going to the gym and getting your personal rep best every single time you go. It's not realistic. And then we start being quite disappointed.
You know, you talk about trust a lot and safety. Where do couples or people start in terms of developing that connection?
Well, I often will be curious around, not just in romantic relationships, but in general, how do you develop trusting friendships? How do you know to trust yourself? And so learning your own process on how you do that and recognizing if that's a skill that might need to be developed is a great place to start. But again, when we start to create safe space, if you think about when you're with someone and you feel pretty good and you might want to share something personal about yourself, or maybe you can, like, you know, exhale and let everything kind of relax, and you don't have to hold everything in so tightly, those would be wonderful opportunities to check in with yourself to see how you're able to do that. How are you able to trust yourself to start connecting with someone else in that way?
We talk about expectations a lot, especially in relationships and in friendships. That word itself is a killer at times, isn't it? But also there is some truth to it. Like, you should have expectations. You should have a bit of standards of what you want. It's your life. You've got to design it. So we always hear, oh, you shouldn't have expectations in relationships or friendships. I don't know. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's important to have expectations, but we want them to be based in reality. So how do you set your expectations? How do you know that the person you expect something from is capable of meeting that expectation? They may have a deep desire to do it, but they may not have the roadmap to get there. And so this is where the next part of the connection and communication and relationships comes about. How do you express what you expect? How do you have a kind and open conversation about those expectations and come to an understanding of people's skill set?
What are some strategies that people could use, whether it's in their relationships or in their friendships in life, whether it's professionally as well, to evoke connection?
So when we talk about connecting, some great strategies are slowing things down to start with, right? And when you have the desire, the urge to, you know, your partner walks in the door and you just want to get into the day, or there's something that's been bothering you, like that's been kind of going on for a bit, and you just want to really get into it when that person walks in the door, maybe slow it down. Create some space where it's quiet, where it's not about communicating. It's not about the talking part of communicating, but it's, you know, sharing space together if that's possible, making some eye contact, embracing a little bit longer, allowing our nervous systems to know and mirror the other person. Slowing it down, I think, is a really important step in creating the environment for a deep connection.
You know, when people are expecting the other person, whether it's in a friendship or a relationship, to communicate as soon as they see each other or as soon as that person is present, does that just need to be dealt with in terms of, hey, we need to slow things down in terms of how we operate? Is that an open dialogue that needs to happen? Or is that something that that other individual should just understand and get? And, or is that an expectation we put on somebody?
Well, and see, Zach, you're bringing up an important aspect in any relationship. It's mind reading, right? Oftentimes people think people should just know something or this should just be a given. And the truth is a lot of times we don't read minds well. So I really encourage anyone to make the implicit explicit. Make sure that if that's a need of yours, like if that's something that provides you with a sense of feeling connected and a sense of being prioritized, a sense of being important to your partner, getting that good morning text, which for a lot of people it does, right? It feels good to, you know, wake up and, you know, your phone dings and the person that you like the most on this planet at this time is thinking about you. That feels really good.
Yeah.
But for some people, that's not how they express it, right? For some people, they're slower to rise, they're slower to get the day going. And it becomes, you know, we personalize things. We make meaning out of things when we don't have information to make meaning out of. So I really encourage people, if that's something that's important to you, that you get clarity on that from the person. So not in a heated, emotionally dysregulated state when you're really upset, going, oh my God, you don't, you know, care about me. You didn't text me 3 days this week in the morning and I'm noticing all these things, because again, what we focus on, we amplify and we can get it really wrong. So giving the person the opportunity to hear what you need, for you to express what you need and to be able to attend to that.
If someone is ignoring the other person's needs, so whether it's a friendship professionally or in a relationship, does that mean the chemistry's over, things are done, and you should just move on? Or is there ways to kind of keep reminding that person? Like, how many times does someone try or say something and the other person does not get it?
And that's very individual.
Yeah.
But I don't know if the chemistry's gone, but the understanding might be, or the misunderstanding. Have you ever had the experience, Zach, when life kind of isn't going quite the way that you want it to be, and you might be in a relationship, but we get so absorbed in our own worlds that we miss what's going on for other people. We miss the opportunity to see from their perspective how our actions or lack of action or lack of attentiveness can affect other people. And we can't be responsible for everybody else, but we can be responsible for keeping our side of the street clean. Meaning that, you know, can we learn the skill of getting our needs met through asking for them? Through being curious and saying, hey, you know what? I've asked this a few times. Notice this isn't really happening. I'm not really sure what's going on. Can you explain it to me? Versus coming at them and saying, you don't do this and you don't do that and you don't do Z. And that's why this is what this means.
When we talk about challenges in relationships, connection. So what we mistake as connection, such as sexual or physical connections versus that mental and sensual and thoughtful connection in a relationship, can it all work out in the end if one is missing?
It's very individual.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say if each person's needs can be met and negotiated within the relationship, then yes. But it really depends, again, on when I look at connection, and a lot of people mistake sex for connecting. They mistake the physical connections that we have for being connected to a person. But I can tell you there's a lot of people that are disconnected when they're physically intimate. So it's not really always true connection. True connection for me, at least the way that I define it, is through that internal sense of safety and that development of trust. That's where connection for me comes, whether it's friendship or my romantic relationship or, you know, even in professional relationships. You want to trust the people that you're surrounding yourself with, that you're being vulnerable with. And so that's the cornerstone of it. And then to deepen those things, I think one of the most important skills in any relationship, Zach, which I think you're really, really tuned into, is being a good listener. When we hear and truly hear our partner or the person that we're engaged with in a moment, that's where we can deepen that connection. being a good listener provides a lot of information. That if we're so hurried and we're dysregulated and we're waiting to respond versus understand, we miss out on a lot of rich opportunity to connect.
Do you think opportunities are always around us? And, you know, if we open the doors, one will truly open. And otherwise, if we just ignore opportunities, ignore situations and just call it life, we can never move the ball forward.
I think we unfortunately do miss a lot of opportunities to connect. It doesn't take much, you know, a simple gesture of, you know, putting your hand on someone's forearm or on their back, taking that extra moment to embrace, taking that moment to make eye contact if that person's comfortable with eye contact, being curious to ask that kind of question, to slow things down. But our society is a different message. Right? It's one of hurriedness and you gotta, you know, hustle and keep going and moving and, you know, also not always focusing on the problems. Sometimes that gets us really stuck in them.
But ignoring a problem and suppressing a problem, you know, we're always told deal with your problems head on and face it and face your fears. So you want to resolve it, and if the other individual, or whether it's in a relationship or in a friendship, ignores it, you feel, I don't know, a lack of worth, because what you're trying to portray or what you're trying to say is an issue is not being addressed by that individual, and they're ignoring it. And now you're thinking, well, do I just pretend everything's okay? You hear that phrase, right? Pretend everything's okay. So do you just find the good and let the rest of it fall in play?
I would use different language. Mm-hmm. It's not about ignoring and avoiding things. That's where we get bigger problems. The more that we avoid something, the larger it grows. If I asked you today, Zach, to go outside and I don't want you to look at any red cars, I really, really want you to work really hard to not see red cars. How many red cars do you think you're going to see?
A lot.
Right. And what we talked about just a few minutes ago is what you focus on, you amplify. So it's not that we're not going to address the problems that arise, but I would suggest to be effective in addressing those, to be effective in communicating and talking and working through issues. Something that's important to bring up about relationships too is that 69% of our problems in relationships are perpetual. And that comes from the Gottman work. John and Julie Gottman are they have the Gottman Institute and they're the experts in relationships. That's where I did some training through. But 69% of our problems are perpetual, so they're not solvable. So what a relief to know that and to be able to learn to manage those, manage our expectations, manage how we address those issues, manage how we talk with our partner about those issues. And then we can actually focus on the 31% of more solvable issues and feel much better about the relationship. It's kind of like you keep walking into a brick wall when you go into the 69% of those perpetual issues.
Totally.
And that becomes also a personal job. That's an each individual job of how am I going to respond to this issue that's going to keep coming up. Like, for example, I've got teenagers in my house and I really like it when they clean their room. But it's a conversation that I have all the time, even though I've been very clear that this is an expectation that I have. It's reasonable, you know, nice room, you smell pretty good, that's awesome. But it can be, it's a perpetual issue. It's something that we revisit often. So do I get really upset and lose my mind and, like, you know, become very authoritarian with my kids? Or do I use it as an opportunity to, like, okay, guys, let's wash, rinse, and repeat. Here's your boundaries. Let's get this done. How do we approach the issue to be more effective to attend to it?
In relationships, we hear that, you know, it's better to just be open and completely transparent, but should there still be boundaries in relationships?
So boundaries are really essential for deepening love, deepening trust. It's important to know where you end and where somebody else begins. If you think about a garden, Zach, if you plant all your carrots really close together, what kind of bounty of carrots are you going to get? do they have an opportunity to grow deep roots? And the answer is, if they're too close together, they're not. If we don't have space to be able to observe and see and experience the person as they are, and understand and observe the person that we are, it's really hard to connect because we're too close together. We can't get perspective. And when things become difficult or challenged or uncomfortable in the relationship, you don't have the perspective. You don't know where that person begins and ends or where you begin and end. And so we want to complement that. We want to create the space to cultivate healthy relationships, deepening everything.
Yeah. I used to watch a show called Entourage, and there's a gentleman named Ari Gold, and that's why my dog's named Ari. But he said something, silence is golden. How true is that?
At times it is. Yeah. One of my mentors has been married a very long time, I think 46 years now. And I asked him once, and his wife, what was the secret to the longevity? And I mean, these people look like they're high school in love. Like they're just, you know, they have a beautiful marriage and relationship. And his response to me was, well, Mandy, I learned a long time ago, we both did, is when to shut the hell up, when it's helpful not to respond to something in that moment, when you choose. And that is where you talk about boundaries, where that space comes into play. You need to learn the skill of learning how to observe and make decisions on what's helpful and what's not. Everything that we think, everything that we feel doesn't warrant sharing all the time. Sometimes it can be really hurtful. Sometimes it's not helpful. So it's all skill development. It's being compassionate. It's being self-aware. It's being other aware. It's being circumstantial aware, right? Learning that, okay, this is one of those perpetual issues, is saying something about this in this moment going to elicit connection. Right. Is my partner going to trust me that I can handle this stuff and be respectful and caring even in the discomfort?
How much does someone need to work on themselves before they get out there in the world, and say specifically in terms of relationships? You know, is there ever a time where I've read enough self-help books, I've listened to everything to better myself, and I so-called perfect. Now you get out there in the world and you realize, oh my God, there's no one else that's worked on themselves as much as I have. And that person's got a lot of baggage with them. Now, do I have to spend all our relationship passing on my knowledge to them? Or, and then do you realize, hey, that's not a real connection anymore. That's not chemistry. I need to find somebody that gets me, gets this invisible perception of what I think a perfect relationship is. Because we all have that, right? We all have these things of what a perfect relationship is. And I don't think that's the case ever out there.
Well, and when we limit ourselves to our own beliefs, it's important to know what you want and be curious mm-hmm. about that. But it's also really a good question to ask how you choose a partner. Because in any moment, we change. You know, we don't know what's around the corner, which is a wonderful thing about being a human being in this world, is we don't know what's coming. You don't know what circumstance might change something for you or for the relationship. And even though we do all of this work, you know, there's not a finish line. You know, self-actualization, when we talk about these sorts of ideas and concepts, being curious enough and evolving and growing and bettering ourselves is wonderful. But what expectations, because that's what I hear, Zach, is there's an implicit expectation that somebody else should be somewhere. But how do you become curious about that? How do you choose a partner? And really, it's about growing individually and collectively, but it's not about carrying the other person up. I mean, absolutely, we want to support our partners, but we are responsible for ourselves. We're responsible for our experience. We're responsible for how we feel and what we think, just like our partner is too. We can influence our partners, but you can't make somebody feel something. You can't make somebody think something. I could say something to you right now and it might really offend you. That wouldn't be my intention. But how you respond to that is negotiable within yourself. And I think when we recognize that and take that accountability, it really enhances relationships. And then we work together. And again, that skill set of being a good listener and a good speaker. How do you attend to problems? Do you come at someone and say, you did this and you did that and you did this and you did that? Or can you say, listen, in this experience, I felt this way. This is my subjective reality, because there's the secret in relationships. You're going to have two subjective realities most of the time.
Mandy, you talk about chasing communication without grounded connection and how that leads to a lot of challenges. What do you mean by that?
I mean that in the heat of a moment, if we're emotionally upset, we want to be heard, right? A lot of people want their partner to listen to them. You don't listen to me. You're not hearing me. You're not understanding me. We want to be understood and heard as people, of course. But when we are emotionally dysregulated, we kind of lose access to our executive functioning brain. So we can't really think clearly. We don't have a lot of reason. We disconnect literally. So we don't have a lot of empathy and compassion accessible to us in those moments. So when someone comes at you and says, you did X, Y, and Z, what is your initial reaction, Zach? Like, how does that make you feel?
Not good at all.
Yeah. Right? You kind Blamed. Of feel like you're ready to get into a fight, like you're preparing. Right?
Your defense kicks in, right?
Right. So we get defensive. And so if we have the opportunity to slow things down, work on that connection of safety and trust within ourselves, within our partner, maybe if we notice our heart rate's higher, if our breathing is more shallow, we take a few minutes to collect ourselves first. Then we go with our partner and try to start communicating. Even in a discussion, if you notice that it's kind of going sideways, right? If you ever talk to someone and you're like, oh, wow, this took a turn. I'm going into a new country. I don't even know where I am anymore. Like, what just happened here? That's a really good opportunity to take a break. Express explicitly to the person you're communicating with, listen, I need to go and regroup and collect myself. I want to put a pin in this conversation. Let's try again in 20 minutes. I'll come back, but let's go take a break because this is not being effective. This is starting to hurt.
No, absolutely. Right? You know, we talk about this verbal communication a lot, whether again, it's in friendships or relationships, mm-hmm. But let's say just relationships in general and with your partner, what are some of the cues that people should be tuned into when it comes to nonverbal communication?
Well, everyone's a bit different. Right. And we think about being like emotionally dysregulated or losing it when someone's yelling or screaming or, you know, flailing about or stomping around. But another type of dysregulation is when somebody shuts down, when they stop talking, when they get really quiet, when they almost become frozen. It's called hypoarousal. They kind of just shut right down. And that's as dysregulated as somebody who's losing it. It's just a different end of it, if that makes any sense.
So, you know, we hear the term when someone's frustrated, there are individuals that'll lash out and pass it on, or there's individuals that completely shut down and they can't do anything. It just can't, and nothing's coming out of their mouth, right?
Yeah. And if you observe couples that do this, or friendships that do this, or even maybe in families, the person that's all heated and up here, when the other person goes sub, like into the hypoarousal, it just really infuriates more the dysregulation. And the more the upset person gets upset, the more the other dysregulated person who's quiet shuts down and disconnects. So when we talk about that connection, when we talk about that safety, this is sort of what I'm talking about.
Interesting.
Getting into that window of tolerance, getting into that place where I actually can think a little bit more clearly. I can see my partner. It's not just about the red that I'm seeing or the blue that I'm experiencing. I can connect.
What can people do to be great listeners? So from good to great, what can people do?
Practice. All of this is skills, right? We don't think of it as skills. A lot of people don't, at least. But it's practicing. It's practicing sitting down with your partner. It's practicing expanding your vocabulary, using a different type of language. Instead of saying you, right? Let's say you and I were having a conversation, Zach, and something came up and I was like, you know what? When you did that, I felt this way. No, you always do this or you never do that.
Automatically, right? Something went up on me. Yeah.
Right. And so noticing that response in yourself, you, as an individual, you can work on saying, hey, you know what? I'm feeling really frustrated. I'm going to walk away and come back in 5 minutes. I'm going to just take a walk. I'm going to go read a magazine. I'm going to get outside. I highly recommend that when you can. Nature kind of can calm a lot of things down. But coming back and trying in a regulated state. But as a speaker, saying things like, starting with something that's positive, you know, I really appreciate your ability to connect with people, Zach. I think it's an admirable quality. And I, you know, how the questions that you ask are so interesting and really engaging. When this happened, I felt this way. This was my experience. And I want to share this with you because it's really bothering me. Mm-hmm. It's much different than you did X, Y, and Z.
So it's responding versus reacting. When that comes to that, that is a really interesting topic, by the way, because walking away from a situation for an X amount of minutes is a response that's a healthy response. As long as you can come back and have that critical conversation, right? And methodical. Yeah.
And as long as you can express to the person you're not leaving them, because that's about connection and safety too. I don't know if you've ever been in an argument with someone and they've left you in the argument and not really said anything. That can elicit a lot of anxiety for people. It can elicit a lot of fears of abandonment.
Well, we hear the word silent treatment, and right. That too is a very toxic way of handling things, right?
Yeah. Well, in the Gottman method, in Gottman therapy, there's something called the Four Horsemen. And what they are defensiveness, criticism, stonewalling, which is when somebody quits talking because they're so dysregulated, they just shut down. It's like someone just turned the power off, right? And the biggest killer of relationships is contempt. So eye rolling, mocking, contemptuous language and tone. That would be an example of contempt. So when we become self-aware of this, when those things start coming up in relationships, that's a skill to be aware of it and then to challenge it with much healthier approaches in communication.
Now, you know, Mandy, you've got some stats here that I find really interesting. Like we talked about earlier, 69% of problems in a relationship are perpetual. We talked about that. Now, it says it takes couples approximately 6 years to seek therapy after a problem arises. How is that so?
Well, let's think about it. Owning our parts can be really hard. Noticing that there's issues in the relationship, people are afraid to be called out. People are afraid that, oh my gosh, this is the end. People sometimes have a belief system that therapy is not a great thing. Like if you're in therapy, as much as we talk about mental health, and I do hope that this continues to change and evolve and just become normal, like a mental health tune-up, right? It's still quite stigmatized, especially in relationship work, you know, or we're in couples therapy. I have the great pleasure of working with a lot of people that just want to enhance connection and intimacy, which is great, right? But most people see going to therapy as there's something wrong, or they are not ready to deal with their part of the equation. And so it takes on average couples about 6 years to finally get to the point where they're like, we need help with this. We can't do this on our own. And by that point, usually, not always, but oftentimes what will happen is you'll have one person fighting for the relationship and the other person's pretty out the door. And so how wonderful would it be if people could start looking at addressing the issues that are perpetual or even the other ones that aren't as they arise, and if they can't figure it out within the relationship, they haven't developed those skills yet, get help, get support. It really can be a life-enhancing relationship. It just creates so much benefit, mm-hmm. not only for the relationship, but for the individuals.
Yeah, because I always think is that can you be preventative instead of posting on a lot of things where, you know, we got to this point where we need therapy now, couples therapy, you know, because you can look back at like hundreds of years. Can we see stats and data to say, can we avoid certain speed bumps in this? And how much is, again, it's individual, but how much is it worth holding on to versus saying, that's a lot of agony and pain and anxiety to just keep within this. This ecosystem's not working.
Well, and again, that's very individual, right? But a lot of times when you're so focused on the problem, it becomes the relationship. So if you can learn how to shift focus so that you can gain the perspective to actually address the problem that's being presented, it can be some really beautiful outcomes.
Totally. You know, not seeing the other person's point of view or knowledge of subjective realities, that's an interesting topic that obviously is so common, you know, again, relationships or friendships or in a work setting, isn't it?
Oh, very much so. And it's where a lot of people get stuck, right? We can't see beyond our own filter. We only see it through our perspective. It's like if I was standing on one side of a tree and you were standing in the other, and I was like, oh, Zach, look at all this cool moss. And you're like, Mandy, there's no moss on this tree. What are you talking about? You're wrong. But I'm standing on the side of the tree where the moss grows. You just can't see it. Right? And so honoring the fact that even though we see something from a certain vantage point, from a certain perspective, through a certain lens of our experience, our partner might have a very different one. Our friend might have a very different one. Have you ever been out at night and like you've had a great time and your friend and you were out with friends and they report something very different than the night that you had? And you're like, where were you? Like, what just happened, right? Or you might have an experience where you'll be sitting there and you'll say something and all of a sudden your partner just deflates. And you're like, what's going on? And they're like, nothing, I'm fine. Except that you know that it's not nothing and you know that it's not fine. But maybe recognizing this is where the skills come in. You know, are they dysregulated? How can you be supportive? How can you evoke that trust? Even with families, with children, creating that safe space, being consistent, that comes through attunement, that comes through showing up, that comes through slowing things down.
Interesting. Well, thank you for your time today, Mandy. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. This has been such a great chat.